You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Don Guerra.
And I'm Sarah Vaughn. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, August 29th, 2017.
We are objecting on the grounds of due process in that this is a vague and uncertain rule that has been imposed that is denying homeless persons the right to be on the sidewalk.
WFHB News Director Wes Martin speaks with Indiana ACLU Legal Director Ken Falk about an Indianapolis ordinance that allegedly targets the homeless.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Courtney Stewart and Stacey Goffinay discuss the upcoming Alzheimer's Awareness Walk in Bloomington. That's coming up on Everyday People, a weekly segment aimed at improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County. But first, these local headlines.
Indiana police say they're worried about a repeatedly proposed Indiana bill that would no longer require residents to receive a permit in order to carry a gun. Gun permits act as a background check to stop individuals with criminal or mental records from obtaining access to guns. But Republican State Representative Jim Lucas of Seymour, Indiana, is trying to repeal the current law that requires gun owners to receive a permit before obtaining a firearm. It's the second year in a row Lucas has tried to repeal the permit process. According to VoteSmart.org, the National Rifle Association gave the Indiana congressman a rating of 100% approval last year. In a press release on August 22nd, Lucas stated, quote, "Today was the first day committee members came together to discuss constitutional carry in a study session at the Indiana State House. The only Hoosiers who would be affected by this potential change would be the law-abiding citizens who would no longer have to be fingerprinted, fill out lengthy forms, and pay the state a fee in order to exercise a constitutional right," unquote. Several police groups have spoken out against Seymour's stance on gun permits. Last year, nearly 5,000 gun permit applications were rejected, largely on the grounds of prior convictions or mental instability. The next meeting for Lucas's committee is scheduled for September 7th.
The Bloomington City Council will meet tonight in its first of several scheduled deliberations over the city's comprehensive plan. City Council member Steve Voland says the comprehensive plan is a guiding document for the Unified Development Ordinance, or UDO, a legal statement of city policy.
The comprehensive plan is simply a policy. While we adopt it by ordinance, it just represents it's like a mission statement or a set of standards for how we want to be. But the zoning ordinance, the UDO, is law. Like, it's literally what you have to do. And it doesn't necessarily have to track with every single word of a comprehensive plan. You know, we might make exceptions that we don't talk about in general terms in the plan. But for the most part, we're basing our revision of our zoning ordinance on the revision of our mission statement.
The comprehensive plan is the successor to what the city used to refer to as the growth policy plan. Voland said under the previous city's previous growth policy plan, large-scale developments like the Square City Block Smallwood apartment complex and the Hilton Garden Inn were allowed.
Smallwood inadvertently set the template for development downtown that the GPP sort of enabled. I mean, it's still good that we have residences in density downtown that have built up over the past decade or more. But we, as a city, may have gone too far, you know, with too many of a single type of population concentrated in one place. It's still better for, I mean, the bus service has exploded in use because we did put a lot of people in a compact place that could be served by the bus. And if they had all been housed in places that were on the periphery of the city or farther away from downtown, like was being done in the 90s, we'd have a hell of a demand for parking and a whole lot more traffic than we have right now. So, you know, we're making progress, but some things worked, some things didn't. And our job now is to try to figure out what the next 10 or 15 years look like.
Volan says the council is setting aside separate times to review the city's comprehensive plan, partly as a result of lawsuits filed against the city after rushing through previous unified development ordinances that courts found to have violated realtors' rights.
The city got sued and lost because they made arbitrary changes to the map in the UDO that the council didn't catch because there was so much to digest during it, because we didn't take long enough. As a result, just for the new GPP, for the new comprehensive plan, we're going to start tonight. First of all, we're meeting on a Tuesday for several meetings in a row, in addition to our regular Wednesday schedule. Secondly, we're going to be meeting every other week for like the next 3 months just to consider this document on Tuesday night. We're going to spend a couple of hours. I don't even know how many hours we're going to spend debating each chapter. I think there's 7 or 8 chapters in the plan, just to make sure we get it right. And we made it clear to the administration that we were not going to pass it quickly.
Councilmember Volan, whose district includes most of downtown Bloomington, says he encourages members of the community to either come to the meetings or at least pay attention to what's going on.
If anyone has an interest in the future of the city, these are the meetings to watch. We'll be talking about philosophy and broad strokes and, you know, what the city should be through the course of debating this document.
Councilmember Susan Sandberg also encouraged city residents to pay attention to deliberations over the comprehensive plan.
So tonight we start the conversation with the downtown, which is certainly a critical piece of the heart and soul of our city. And each subsequent Tuesday meeting, we will tackle another of the chapters. If there are any amendments that council members hope to place on it, that will all be discussed and shared with the public in advance and incorporated into the document. But it's the planning document, and it's a big deal.
The City Council will begin deliberations over the comprehensive plan tonight at 6:30 in Council Chambers at the Showers Building.
The town of Ellettsville has hired a new police officer and a new firefighter. Logan Fry, a graduate of IU's Police Academy, was sworn in during the council's August 28th regular meeting. Town Councilmember Brian Mobley was the sole council member who voted against hiring Fry. Mobley questioned whether hiring Fry was improper, given that fellow council member Bryce Teeter worked with Fry at IU.
Even though he is going to be part-time here, and not say anything with Bryce, but Bryce being on the town council, his boss here, with any reflection of any kind of, you know, problems with him working on the street with Bryce at IU, and then coming being here, being his boss here. In a roundabout way.
I'll address that. I'll just recuse myself of any council business if it comes to him.
Okay. That's what I wanted to clear.
Yep.
That, you know, anytime we would hire somebody from the same area.
Fire Chief Mike Corman received approval to hire firefighter Troy Colvin part-time. Corman said Colvin will also be called on to provide EMT services.
It's not a new position. It's just to fill the holes that, you know, as I mentioned in some other correspondence, I lost roughly 5 regular part-timers in the past 6 months that filled a heavy duty of the workload and part-time status.
Mobley expressed concern that police and fire departments are using part-time positions to fill gaps when what they really need are full-time employees. In the town council's August 14th meeting, Mobley pressed Corman and the council to use public safety tax dollars to fund a full-time firefighter. Corman said at the time that income from the public safety tax varied from year to year, and he feared having to lay off a new hire due to inconsistent funding. This week, Mobley additionally questioned the number of employees allowed to take personal time off at one time. Mobley called for a work session on the topic.
It seems like every time it's putting a Band-Aid on it, we're going to hire part-time. We're going to hire part-time. And I know other places where I've worked, other places that friends of I've worked, they're only allowed like 3 people off a shift. You know, that's it. If another guy wants off, sorry.
Yeah.
But that's something that I want to revisit and go with to look at later on in the future.
Mobley said he's taken some grief behind the scenes for questioning the choices of department heads.
And I'm still working with taxpayers' money, and I'm not going to sit here and just rubber stamp things and believe everything a supervisor tells me. And that's nothing to go wrong with any supervisor here. But my job is to protect the town's money, taxpayers' money. And that's what I will do, and I'll keep doing it. And, you know, I can get the bad behind-the-scenes calls and everything else about me, but, you know, I'm here to protect the town's taxpayers' money, and I may ask questions that people don't like to hear. But that's my job. And if I do it, then fine. If not, then you can vote me out in 2 years.
The council also approved a fire protection agreement between the town of Ellettsville and Van Buren Township. Chief Kornman said when the Central Emergency Dispatch gets a call for locations within the township, Ellettsville is automatically notified to respond.
Nothing has changed. We've been doing this agreement since 1972. We've also have amended it in 1983 to add rescue apparatus. It's the same thing we've been doing for a long time, but now it's in writing.
Kornman said a formal agreement is in the works for a similar understanding the town has with the Northern Monroe Fire Territory. Kornman said he only recently learned of the need to formalize the agreements in writing in order to meet standards set by the Insurance Services Office, or ISO, a for-profit rating organization. The ISO bases its rating of a fire department on water supply, emergency dispatch, and firefighting capability, Kornman said. The fire department's ISO rating affects area home and commercial insurance rates. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Don Guerra. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
The ACLU of Indiana filed a lawsuit against the city of Indianapolis earlier this month, alleging that the city was engaged in unequal enforcement of laws by targeting the homeless. WFHB News Director Wes Martin spoke with ACLU Legal Director Ken Falk this morning about the lawsuit.
While the city of Bloomington attempts to discourage people experiencing homelessness or drug addiction from congregating in its downtown, the city of Indianapolis is facing a legal challenge for its disparate treatment of the homeless. On August 4th, city officials posted a notice that homeless people had to remove themselves and their belongings from downtown underpasses within 4 days. The American Civil Liberties Union subsequently filed a lawsuit against the city of Indianapolis for unconstitutionally prohibiting homeless individuals from gathering on public sidewalks downtown while exempting those who are not homeless.
We are objecting on the ground of due process in that this is a vague and uncertain rule that has been imposed that is denying homeless persons the right to be on the sidewalks.
Ken Falk is the legal director for the ACLU of Indiana. In an interview earlier this morning, Falk said the ACLU is taking the city of Indianapolis to court based off of their discrimination in notifying those experiencing homelessness that they had to get off the sidewalks.
The homeless persons received a notice from the city, which we attached to our complaint, indicating that there was now an emergency and they could not congregate under the bridges. Since that time, homeless persons, even if they stand in these locations, have been told they have to move on, whereas persons who are obviously not homeless have not been so informed. At least that's what we've been told by our clients, and that offends equal protection, as well as the earlier comment I made concerning due process. You can't treat people unequally like that. But more importantly, there is a basic right for people to be in public places and on sidewalks when they're not in any way being disruptive. And the idea that a city can declare an emergency and move people off the sidewalk when there is no obvious emergency seems to be problematic to us.
And for our listeners here in Bloomington, could you give a little bit of background about what that emergency is or what the policy issuance, where that came from?
Well, the order was an order that was issued declaring emergency, ordering that homeless persons who had congregated under these bridges immediately vacate, declaring a public emergency because of potential threats to public safety. I'm not quite sure what that means. There were homeless persons residing underneath these bridges. They weren't in any way blocking the sidewalks. This is, at this part of Annapolis, the sidewalks are very wide. More importantly, the order has been interpreted apparently to prevent, as I said, homeless persons from either standing or sitting or even being in these areas or stopping in these areas. All that seems to be far beyond what a city has the right to do with regard to its public sidewalks.
And why would the city of Indianapolis try to prevent people from congregating on sidewalks or under bridges?
I mean, obviously, I cannot speak for the city of Indianapolis, but what our plaintiffs was told was that there was concern that if, in fact, there are large groups of people going to the stadia down there, that there could be bombs or explosive devices in property left underneath the bridge. Of course, that doesn't explain why a person is unable to stand or stop under the bridge, nor does it explain why the city is enacting this emergency when there are no events going on in these areas in the downtown. So I'm not quite sure what the motivation of the city is.
What is the timeline for this class action suit?
Well, the case has recently been filed. We are going to be shortly seeking an injunction, an order to immediately or to stop the policy pending a final hearing. And we will be arguing, as I said, that there's vagueness in this policy that is unconstitutional and also a violation of equal protection. People are not being treated the same. We are seeking an injunction to preventing the city from declaring an emergency when there is no emergency. And we're seeking an injunction to prevent the city from treating persons who are homeless differently than persons who are not homeless. We're talking about a decision to declare an emergency, and obviously the decision itself specifically targets homeless persons and people congregating under these bridges. However, in its enforcement, it appears that it is only being enforced against homeless persons, not against other persons, which raises the equal protection concerns that I alluded to.
That was Indiana ACLU legal director Ken Fox speaking earlier this morning in an interview with WFHB news director Wes Martin. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Coming up next, WFHB's weekly community resources segment, Everyday People.
Don't mess around.
Welcome to Everyday People, improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County.
Everyday resources for everyday people, connecting our community by sharing resources you need, want, and probably don't know about.
Hi, Stacy. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Courtney?
I'm great. Stacy and I are here. We're going to talk a little bit about the upcoming Alzheimer's Walk here in Bloomington on September 24th. And this is a local effort to raise funds for people suffering from Alzheimer's.
It's at Bryan Park, the Woodlawn Shelter.
Okay.
Actually, the last time I was there, it was on the other side, so they moved it.
To the Woodlawn Shelter side, all right.
And registration is at noon, and I think you said it's on September 24th. That's
right.
A Sunday. So you go, you register, by noon. I believe if you bring donations of $100 each person, you get a free t-shirt, which is pretty cool.
That is cool.
And the opening ceremony is at 1:15. It's very touching. I know that was always one of my favorite parts. I don't know if they do this every year, but they have in the past, they would have these flowers that would spin. You put them in your garden,
mm-hmm.
or in a pot, and different groups of people, caregivers, would hold up a flower, and people with Alzheimer's would hold up the flower, and it's a powerful moment, and they have different speakers, and it is a great program. If you're interested in doing the walk, the representative for our area, his name is Kyle, and the phone number is 317-587-2238. I think it's going to be a good event. They've been growing by leaps and bounds the last mm-hmm. few years.
It looks like you can go online to alz.org if you are unable to participate in the walk, want to learn more about the walk, or want to make a donation, probably the best way to do it.
Yeah, and they have, you can find a walk in your area by zip code, and you can search on there. And some of the facts that we looked up said more than 5 million people are living with Alzheimer's.
And didn't you say that that's just in the United States?
Yes.
That's an incredible number. Yeah.
And it said by 2050, this number could be as high as 16 million.
It's stunning. The scope of those affected by Alzheimer's is a lot wider than I realized.
Oh, and I think the fact about just the U.S. was that every 66 seconds, someone in the U.S. develops or is diagnosed with the disease. Every 66 seconds. That's amazing.
It is amazing.
And one in three seniors will die with Alzheimer's or dementia. And since 2000, deaths from heart disease have decreased by 14%, which is great.
It is great.
But deaths from Alzheimer's have increased, said, by 89%.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, the money goes to research, and that's definitely needed so that they can find out more about potential causes and cures and how to educate people better and how to that's a lot of what the Caregiver University is doing, as well as is teaching people how to give care to those with Alzheimer's, to friends or loved ones, and how to make that transition. And Alzheimer's definitely seems to be a very transitional. Right. You have phases that are, you know, as it progresses, it tends to get worse, and more education and different education is needed due to the nature of that disease. So,
and two, something that I had learned as a caregiver was that it changes with each person, with each day, with each time. What worked today may not work tomorrow.
Right. So kind of probably a lot to look at as a caregiver. Like,
absolutely.
I'm not sure what I did yesterday isn't working today.
Right.
So I know they provide a lot of resources.
Yeah. And there's also a number on the alz.org. I didn't write that down, but there's a number. I believe it's a hotline you can call if you're in a crisis situation and you just don't know what to do. You can call and get some help from them. So, if you're interested in the Alzheimer's Walk, give Kyle a call. Again, his number is 317-587-2238. And I got this off the website, so I hope he's okay with us tossing it
out
there. I
assume he is, if it's on the website.
That's what I was thinking. So, if you have any questions, give Kyle a call and join the team in a walk today.
Thanks for joining us on Everyday People.
Tune in next week for more information and resources that connect everyday people to everyday resources. For WFHB, I'm Courtney Stewart.
And I'm Stacey Goffinet.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Alex Davis and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Everyday People is produced by Courtney Stewart and Stacey Goffinet. Our engineer is Megan Wade. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming, online at WFHB.org.
And you can be part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have the show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for Interchange, Bloomington Community Radio's longest-running public affairs program, coming up next on WFHB.
You're tuned to WFHB.